ladies and gentlemen, it is a leap day on a leap year. We are officially on February 29th. That's right. Usually only 28 days in February. It's one, yeah, every 4 years, if you didn't know, an extra day. So we're going to use that day, and we're going to make an MSB Initiative podcast here. So thank you for coming to the MSB Initiative, MSB Talk podcast. Again, February 29th, 2024. I'm going to get through some housekeeping, and we'll get into the good stuff. And here is that housekeeping, MSPinitiative.com. If you don't know how to spell it, initiative, go to Google, try and figure it out. It'll give you the right spelling. Put MSP in front of it, add .com at the end. It'll take you to this page where you will see sessions like this one that we are recording right now. And it will be in podcast and video format on YouTube. Like us, follow us. You know, these go back to like March of 2020. We all know when that time was. So just kept them going. We have two, not one, but two MSP Community Mind events. So if you didn't hear about these last year, our first one's coming up in Nashville, I would say next month, but technically we're still in February. So in about 45-ish days from now, April 17th and 18th in Nashville. And then we have one coming later on this year in Denver on July 24th and 25th, right before we get into like that August, you know, hot month. But you'll see a bunch of panelists. We have MSPs who are coming in to talk shop with you. So there's many, multiple MSP panels. And then there are expert workshops. This is not death by PowerPoint. They're like 2 hours a workshop. And our goal is to have you walk out with actually something tangible rather than just, you know, hey, you know, buy something from me and try and sell you something, because that's not the case. So, you know, thank you to our sponsors that are helping us do this. Again, this is in Nashville. We're going to be right by the airport. And then, of course, we'll get some evening shenanigans in there like everywhere else. So totally educational event. Absolutely free for an MSP to register. Got to get there. I know that costs a little bit of money, but we're not charging $3.99, $9.99, $12.99 to register. It is absolutely free as you as an MSP to come. So please take advantage of that. And this is hopefully a format that makes sense for you. And then we have our block parties, after parties, party parties. I know everybody loves these. We got the first one coming up at the end of March. We're working with the good folks over at Enable for their Empower event in Dallas. So if you're in the greater Dallas area and want to join us the evening of March 26th from 9 to 2, again, as an MSP, it costs you absolutely nothing to join us other than, you know, you have to get there. So, but if you're going to the Enable Empower event in Dallas, hopefully you'll be joining us. We're actually on the event agenda. We love that. Thank you very much, Team Enable. And we are going to be having a great time. So that is two things that are coming up. The MSP Community Minds in Nashville, mid-April. The block party around the Enable Empower event at the end of March. These are around the corner, literally for you. No purchase necessary. So there you go. We have some community offers, which are just deals, hookups, offers from vendors in the space if you want to take advantage of them. Awesome. And then lastly is our industry calendar, which is like, I don't know, between 250 and 300 events that we've popped into the calendar so that you know what's going on in the sandbox. These things just continue to get added. They go all the way to the end of the year. Use this as you will, but at least something is in one place rather than 800 places. So that is all our homework, MSPinitiative.com. We bring back somebody who's not a stranger to the show, Jason from Mission Control. How you doing today, Jason?
I'm great, George. How you doing?
You know, I was just in Orlando for a few days, down at Zero Trust World, put on by the great folks over at Threat Locker. And as a guy who lives in suburban Philadelphia, it was nice to be in the sun for a few days. I came back to a little bit wet, very windy, and a little bit colder. Like 37 degrees today. So definitely enjoyed the Florida sun for a few days.
Yeah, I don't want to talk weather. I've got snow outside my house. It has been a lousy 24 hours. The weather's up and down like a yo-yo here lately, but it's on the down. So not enjoying it at the moment. Happy to be where we want.
Yeah, I was like I could, like trash cans are floating down my street this morning. That's how windy it was. So actually had a colleague of mine flying back to like middle of New York, and they literally couldn't fly, like land the plane. And so
Wow.
they diverted her back to like she like had a layover, but then ended up in Philadelphia of all places. And I kind of cracked up and I was like, oh, okay, cool. You need any help? Luckily the airlines took care of her, got her a hotel room, which is always nice. And then this morning she's like, why is it that I can get a Philly cheesesteak in the airport at 5 a.m. but not a Starbucks coffee? And I'm like, well, you're in Philadelphia. It sounds about right.
Yeah, I know where you are. Yeah.
So definitely have security on the mind being at Zero Trust World for a few days. Always love seeing, 700, 800, 900 people in one place talking shop, because always good conversations when you got a bunch of people together. Like I feel like the whole cybersecurity thing maybe took a back seat once this whole AI, fascination popped up in the marketing. But it's still there. And what I gather from a lot of the people that I talked to this past week was nobody, like a lot of people still don't have a really good handle, right? Like they just kind of put sandbags down and hope that when the water comes, they have enough built up to like, get through it. But from a like internal resources of the IT services provider, managed services provider, I mean, not really there for a lot of people, right? Like they may have a guy who knows like that there's a lot of stuff in place, but like they're really leveraging outside vendors and like, hoping that they got it in right before whatever happens, right? So you're in this. You're talking to MSPs all day long trying to outsource stuff, right? So I would love to get your opinion on what's the current state of affairs here, right? Has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse? And like what does it look like when it comes to preparing for that situation?
Yeah, what a topic. I actually feel bad. I feel bad, genuinely. I feel bad for the MSPs. And recently at some of the conferences I've been at, they've been talking about how it used to be an IT service provider, or what it would have been called an MSP. They used to be the tech guys, the guys with the bench of techs that would go and solve technical problems. And that was 95% of what they had to do. They were the IT geniuses, right, for the businesses they serviced. And now it tends to be more 50% at least. They are a reseller of tools and services provided to the MSP channel, because how in the world else are they going to do this? They can't have the expertise on all of these things, including cybersecurity, compliance, now AI, all these other things that are creeping up, plus general tech, right? How are you going to have your monitoring in place and your anti everything and your all this stuff? So I think to the points I keep hearing is that it's changed so much now to being a reseller of something else that you can't be an expert of. And cybersecurity is definitely one of those things. ThreatLocker is just one of, but there's so many different vendors in that space, and that a lot of them do different things. And a lot of MSPs feel like they need all of them, or at least a good percentage of them, right? So I actually feel bad for the MSPs, but I don't think there's a way back to the way that it was, because otherwise you need a bench full of unique senior level talents. And I mean, our business is built on having a lot of that being used by a service. And we have a lot of those in place, but I think that, some of the other vendors in the cybersecurity spaces do particularly cybersecurity things, have got a bunch of people that just do that, or at least it's part of built into their service, right?
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing, right? Like, there's definitely a fear factor of, hey, whenever my term comes, did I do enough to prevent either A, I lost my customer, or B, I get sued. Yeah, I mean, like, we are, America is an easy place to do either, right? Or both at the same time, which is even worse. And like, here's the thing, like, like the worst scenario is when there's a perceived major issue, and like, and I talk about this, I feel like, constantly, right? It's like, hey, with all this nouveau stuff, right? Like before, you would outsource stuff to like overseas, right? That was a thing for a while, and that, like, I think the experience of that didn't go well, right? Talk to anytime you call like a manufacturer's help desk, and they call India, right? Like it didn't go well. And then they pulled that back, And then, like, now they're trying to, like, I don't know, maybe automate that interaction with, like, the bot, right? And, like, I think, like, that can also go very badly, right? Because it's like, hey, I just need help. What do I need to do to get a human being, right? Rather than go through all of the, it's like the nouveau version of how many buttons do I have to press before I can get to a person on the auto attendant? And then, you know, like now it's like, hey, I have a problem. I need to talk to someone. And like, why is it so hard for me to get to a human being? Because they're like trying to gate the actual person that can that have a live conversation. My example, which everybody can commiserate with, is like, and since we were talking about airplanes earlier in this call, it's like, hey, Frontier Airlines deleted their phone number, right? If they have a problem, you know, the plane didn't show up, got canceled, need to reschedule, whatever. It's like, there ain't nobody to call, right? You gotta deal with the bot or nothing. I don't know if I like that, Jason. Like, and quite frankly, I would say, and I would love to get your opinion on this, because I brought this up a few times in a row, but like, I would think people would pay even a premium to not have to deal with the bot and just go straight to the individual. What do you think?
I think some would. Like, okay, so a couple of good examples. And funny you mentioned the plane. So I actually hung up on a 50-minute hold to an airline before this. And I hung up because our call was about to start. And I hung up because after 50 minutes, they hadn't yet answered. And I've got my flight tomorrow. And I have a small issue, right? I could have gone on the chat. But I know that in this case, the chat won't be able to help me. But they provide the chat. The chat is fully bought for the first, 10 questions until you get down to it. And then there's a small percentage of things it can help me with or that it can't help me with. And, you know, there goes the route, right? Oh, we'll connect you to a technician. Then guess where the technician is or the specialist, right? So, you know, being in the outsourced world, obviously, now we have an amazing amount of North American resources, right? That's why we became so popular so quickly. During COVID, we had some people move, but I mean, like the principle started here. I'm in Toronto, for goodness sake. But at the same time, so one of our processes I'll talk about. So when somebody calls an MSP, an end user calls an MSP, and they forward their call to us, they want us to answer the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It is our dispatch team who will answer the call. It is not a technician. And and I make that distinction because a lot of the time when you speak to a technician right away, you're always going to reach a junior.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to wait longer to speak to that junior because you're speaking direct to a tech. And by their nature, technicians are not sitting on the sitting on the bench waiting for the phone to ring. They're busy working right. Tickets. So mm-hmm. Wait longer to speak to a tech. And then when you speak to them, they may not be the most appropriate tech. Our dispatch team are not technicians. Their job is to answer the phone super quickly, have an amazing end user experience, make the ticket. Because even still, that technician, the work that ticket might be on the MSP side or our side. So they make the ticket inside of the MSP's PSA, and then the rules kick in up to who's supposed to service it. And we've had discussions about it. Would an MSP charge more, pay more? Would they pay us more to have direct to tech?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think many would. It's the same argument that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But if they would pay more for it, and they get somebody, and that one person happens to have an experience with them that is not exactly what they're looking for, then it defeats the purpose anyway.
That's true.
So if I get through to, I was trying to call WestJet. So if I get through to WestJet and I wait that 50 plus minutes to speak to somebody, mm-hmm. I'm already frustrated by the time I speak to them. But if they answered right away and it was somebody who really was an awful conversation, but they helped me quickly, I don't know. My dispatcher is not going to have awful conversations.
So did they offer you the option to have, like, it's like, hey, long hold time. Just give us your number. We'll call you back and we'll give you an estimate on when that call is going to. No, that's not an option.
No, I was so frustrated. We offer that.
Yeah. But
no, they didn't even offer the callback service. I was so upset. I was like, why not? The technology's out there already. But again, still, I prefer that because then at least I know I'm getting a call back later. And hopefully I'm speaking to somebody appropriate. I waited longer, but I got what I needed the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, customer experience is like it's like an art more than a science, I think. Yeah, some people may argue with me on that, but again, the perceived priority of the issue is at the middle of everything. You know what I mean? Like, either A, I think I'm important. My time, I don't want to waste my time. Just solve my problem. Or A, I think I'm having an emergency. 911, give me help. Right. And like everything else is like, hey, you know, it would be nice if I got it fixed now, but like, just let me know when you can get it done. Right. And like varying levels of that. And there's all sorts of, you know, stuff about, hey, you know, first close, you know, our first interaction close rates and, you know, average time to resolution. And there's all these metrics and, you know, things that you can follow. You know, I would say that MSPs in their mind, right, when you say customer experience, they're like, oh, well, I'm just going to provide really good tech support and do it as fast as I can. And there's some truth to that, but like, that's not exactly style points either, right? Like, that's just the brass tacks of, hey, that's the business that you're offering. And the more that you can't get that part right, you know, like you just dilute that, you know, to say, hey, can somebody else do it better, right? There's always this argument about that.
I mean, again, I could be wrong and people might argue with me also, but I preach that technical support is 50% customer experience and service. It's 50%. Okay. It's absolutely half. I mean, you can have a single call that's far more technical focused. You can have a single call that's far more customer experience focused. But I think if you average that out, the end user needs something solved, but they need a good experience with it most of the time. Yeah. And if it's not, let's say, a really, really simple thing of you've got a 5-minute job to do of a password reset or whatever. If it's anything more complicated than that, there might also be back and forth. That back and forth of the initial call to the I'll get back to you when or I have the information now, can we talk now, or whatever it is, or I'm going into a meeting, I'll have to call you later when they call, you know. All those little things end up being customer experience interactions. They're not technical. The password reset or the fixing of the printer or the making the computer run faster, that part was technical, but everything else around that was the customer experience. And if that doesn't go well, that might be the only thing they remember.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, listen, I call it the high school effect. People remember bad before they think about good, right? I mean, that's just how it goes. It's definitely an uphill battle in that realm. That's why you try and prevent bad. Like, okay is probably not a bad thing, but bad is always a bad thing. Let me flip topics a little bit, right? Because, you know, this is not super new, but not super old, right? Back in, you know, right at the end of 2023, a lot of conversation around caller and user verification came up because of that whole MGM hotel casino, you know, shenanigans. I don't even call that a hack. I mean, I know it was advertised that way, but like, they didn't hack anything. They got in because they bamboozled somebody to make them think that they were somebody they weren't. And like, by the way, like back at the, you know, Zero Trust World this past week, it's like social engineering was a big part of the conversation. Cause like, you don't have to do a lot to get that to go your way, right? As a bad guy, you know, you're just basically jumping off the fact that the person is not paying attention or they're not, you know, really like thinking about the, you know, what's coming through their computer, their phone, their text message, whatever. And so like in that case, somebody like went to LinkedIn. I think, you know, like in my mind, that's what they did. They figured out a name of a person working for the company. They called into the help desk number. They said they were, you know, whatever, Joe Smith, and like nobody ever like fact checked that that was who they really were. And then they said, okay, here's a password reset. And then like, they're in. Yep. I don't call that a hack. You left the door open. They walked through. Okay. Right. So like, what do you do on your side? And I'm sure that this is even more difficult for you because you're dealing with many service providers out, you know, potentially outsourcing some of that to your team. How do you put checks and balances in place in order to kind of fix that problem?
Yeah, well, to your point, we have to do end user verification. So I think it was early last year, we implemented a feature that allowed us to do precisely that. So as long as we service a lot of MSPs. We are integrated with the MSP's PSA, which gives us access to their tickets, but also their contacts and mm-hmm. the contact profiles. So if in their PSA, under that contact, there is a mobile phone number for that person. Mm-hmm. We'll validate them by email. We'll validate them by corporate business email, so long as that's not what they're trying to reset. Mm-hmm. But we have the end user verification through SMS, and we've had that for a while. Small plug, we just partnered with Traceless, Do that with them along with our password delivery, because their technology is encrypted that way. And we like that a little bit better than the way that we built it ourselves. But we've had that for a while. And the end user verification now, the MSP gets to decide when they onboard with us, and they can always turn it on afterwards if they want that, because if they want it, it's a firm requirement. They can't have it for some, not for other, that wouldn't work. So it's either on or it's off. And if they don't have a phone number, and let's say they're calling for a corporate email password reset, so we can't verify them now, we have to give that back to the MSP to confirm that phone number for us, or to handle that end user verification, give it back. Because it's just like anything else, we can't be socially engineered the same way. Like, that's just not going to happen here. So can't allow it.
Yeah. I'm sure you run into, I mean, this is probably basic blocking and tackling, but like, somebody calls in, they're like, oh, I'm calling from, George's accounting. They're like, okay, cool. They're like, but I don't have you don't have their information in the system. And they're like, well, I need help. And it's like, that's great. But like, I don't know. I don't have you here. So I can't, I'm not authorized to work with somebody that's not already in the system. So like, how do you handle that exception? Does the MSP have to go action something, or like, how does that person then get put in for the first time?
Yeah, so it's effectively a rule, but most of the time what they end up doing is we have rules in our system that say if we get a call from an unknown account or an unknown person, and when that happens, our rule ends at we can either call the MSP and transfer it to them, or we make a ticket in their PSA regardless, but we make the ticket under the MSP's company, and that's where we're done. But we won't actually do any support actions. We'll just make the ticket and let them know that there's a ticket that got created for them there and that it's on them to do. Until they correct the data anyway.
I'm sure it happens all the time. Like when you first onboard an account and for this type of service to augment the MSPs, internal people, like I'm sure they like send over contacts, right? Or make sure that there's, they probably do that homework at that point in time. But then like day-to-day stuff happens, right? People leave, people come, and then like that part always seems to be the forgotten part.
Well, sure. So, and again, like, so let's say we're already working with an MSP. They bring on a new customer tomorrow.
Yeah.
That customer has 50 people, 100 people, whatever. Those people are not automatically contacts within the MSP's PSA.
Yeah.
That happens over time by them sending in tickets or them calling in or whatever. So we don't even have them. If they're able to provide a staff list, or they can enter that staff list into the contacts, we're in good shape. If not, and they want the end user verification turned on, which I think, frankly, they should for the most part, it definitely puts a little bit of a limit on us, but it's for everyone's benefit. They can't verify them if they're new any more than we can at the beginning without at least having that, right? So
yeah, I mean, and like, it seems like such a trivial thing, but it's not.
Not anymore. The truth is, every MSP, when they onboard a new client, part of it should be that the client provides them with that staff list at the time. And part of it just has to be they have to enter it. Otherwise, you're at that social engineering bullseye almost.
Yeah. And like, by the way, MGM would have made a headlines because it was big and they're known. But like, that stuff probably happens regularly for everybody. You just,
I think I read that they estimate that whereas ransomware, back when it was crypto locking everything all over the place, that ransomware is already surpassed ransomware costs to businesses overall in North America already. Like it's that big. People are sending money to places that they shouldn't have been because they were tricked or duped.
Yeah. So the social engineering thing is for real. By the way, like when we talk about emails and spoofing and text messages and robo dialing and all this, whatever, but like it just takes one person on the wrong time, on the wrong day, and bad things happen from there, right? So like it's a shame, right? Because like you could be a 10-person company, you could be a 100-person company, you could be a 1,000-person company, and then like all of a sudden one person did the wrong thing. Like that a person at Zero Trust World talking about how like they would do like physical pen testing, right? Like they would try and like get into the back door and like walk into the office, and like, you know how many people still have the sticky note with their password underneath the keyboard? Like a lot of people, right? And it's just like you just leave yourself open for this.
Part of, again, why I feel bad for the MSP. They just have all these different variables that they really can't control, that they're ultimately, I don't know if the word liable makes sense, but they still have to deal with it.
Yeah.
No. Doesn't matter what piece of paper that client of yours signs that absolves you from the mistake that their end user is going to do if, you know, after you offer them security awareness training, you're still going to have to deal with it. It's a lot.
My favorite is the, hey, I want to change my bank account on my payroll, or hey, go buy gift cards. You know how often that happens? All the time. It's like, and that's the thing, right? Like, back to the, well, how do they get the information to do that? I think we've slowly over time, like, leak information on all the platforms and the social medias and the online services. And then all of a sudden, like, if you spend enough time looking hard enough, you can pull in a lot of information on a person. And then all of a sudden they use that information against you, right?
So,
you know, it's a very interesting world. So back to the concept of, hey, I still think after years and years and years, at least me being in the sandbox, I like to call it, nobody's cracked the, you know, the personnel thing, right? Like, there's always some sort of mismatch between the amount of time, resources you have in your MSP and the number of clients that you're supporting. And then there's, like, profitability in the middle of all of that, right? Because, like, at the end of the day, you're hoping that your business is actually making money. And I hope that they are. I know a lot of MSPs, when by the time they go and figure it out, they're probably not, which is a problem. And I was actually talking to a US-based MSP about UK-based MSPs. And they were like, yeah, you know, like, the average UK-based MSP is charging like 30, 40, 50 pounds per workstation per user. And we're like, even when you do the conversion, like, that's not what's happening in the States, right? Like, 150, 175, 200. So, like, what, you know, like, I don't know if you asked this question, I'm curious, but what do you think the, like, average price point is, like, with your services included, right? Like, because the MSP is like, hey, I'm going to package what you're doing, outsourcing, you know, help that into the package. Like, what do you see the baseline price, you know, like, that the MSP is charging?
I mean, some of it's obviously geographically, you know, different, but in, like, your classic metropolitans, yeah, I think the average we're seeing is between 150 to 200 a seat. I know that a lot of, like, I went to a conference last month that was more peer focused, but also very salesy focused, and they're targeting the 200 something per seat. I went to a conference a couple of weeks ago that was very sales focused, and they're focusing on 300 a seat. So that, I think the industry understands that they need to get their pricing up. I think anyone who's charging for an all you can eat, with stuff included and all that stuff, anything less than 150, you are not only leaving money on the table, but I don't think you know your costs well enough to make the margins that you need. That might, you know, again, people can argue with me, but again, and that's, again, geographically focused, but if you're in a metropolitan, those tend to be the lower of the numbers that seem to be where people can make some money is at the 150 mark, and they're obviously making more at the 200 mark. That includes your cybersecurity pieces. It includes your, you know, your RMM, obviously some overhead for things like your own documentation and PSAs and all those things you can't pass on, but, like, that's where you, I think, need to be. Obviously servers are different and cloud services are different. I don't include those, but for just the labor and the basic tools, and that might not even include things like Office 365 licenses, although it could. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. It just scares me sometimes when I hear some of the numbers. Like, we become a white label extension of the MSP's technical team and servicing their clients. So we're part of that labor force, right? And when I hear an MSP coming to me and they ask me what our hourly rate is, because we do hourly work. So if an MSP just wants to send us random overflow tickets during the day and have us deal with after hours, evenings, weekends, and holidays, the best way for us to do that is by time. They're not dealing with the by device or the by user, just time for whoever. Mm. And we do that, and an MSP tells us that they're charging $60 an hour, or $70 a seat. And it hurts, because I know that they haven't really understood their costs. Biggest worry for me is that they haven't understood their costs, or that their costs are so low that they're not doing it right, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many people out there that talk about this, right? Like, that you need to be a profitable business. You're not in business to work for free. I mean, it's kind of a, I mean, let's be honest, this is not exactly an easy business, right? I mean, like, you do need to, you know, Sandy pops in. Definitely costs are too low at $60 per hour. I agree, Sandy. I mean, $60 per hour. I number one, Jason, I didn't even know you did things hourly, so that's good. Yeah, you know, learned that on this call. But like, $125 an hour, $140, $150, $160, $185, $200. It's like $60 an hour. I mean, you must be, you know, it must not have a lot of overhead costs, I guess.
At the beginning of the call, I was mentioning, we were talking about the, you know, what needs to be included. I mentioned, so if what I said was true, and that half of an MSP's thing right now is to be reselling the right stuff. Yeah. Because tools and services do a lot of what an MSP needs to do. Those all have their costs to it. So if half of your thing is going to be costs on things that you're going to resell for whatever amount, yeah, it's built into, or at least some of it's going to be built into your per seat or per user cost, mm-hmm, plus hourly or whatever you're doing, right? So that number can't be that low.
I mean, if you're basically losing money, I think at that price point, have to.
Well, and again, I've met MSPs that, look, I mean, just straight up, I met MSPs where they charge $70 an hour. And so I asked them, okay, so that's what your time is worth? So that's not, you know what I mean? You can't undervalue yourself either, let alone the costs of the things that you have to actually pay for on a plus minus, right?
Yeah. Sandy pops in. He says $60 an hour is the burn rate of one decent paid intermediate or senior analyst in Canada. So like basically the business's expense rate without overhead on just that individual. Probably, yeah, I'm not even arguing that point. That's, you're probably right, Sandy. I mean, I just, like, I know at the end of the day, you know, and everybody packages their pricing differently, especially when you're doing hourly. Some people are like, hey, I'll only sell you blocks of time, right? Not doing hourly, or minimum 2 hours or something like that, right? To make sure that, you know, they're not wasting, you know, like, you know, death by a thousand cuts, right? Where you're just not making enough money. But, you know, it's funny. The lawyers and some of the other, like, professionals out there, right, when they're charging $300, $400, $500 per hour, I got to think at some point technology's going to, I mean, some people do bear that cost, let's be honest, right? But at some point that's coming. It has to go up.
I will never forget that. If I can pass on wisdom ever, I'll never forget this happening to me. There was a legal situation. This goes back well more than 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
At least. It's a long time ago. I remember talking to a lawyer. This was my first legal experience ever. Hired a top end firm, and we weren't the defendant. We were the ones that were actually claiming. And I remember getting my first bill, and I went to speak to the lawyer, and I asked him how in the world, like, we got there, and he said to me, "We charge for our time. This is what our time is worth. You hired us. This is the rate that we agreed upon, but we have no choice. If we're doing this or this or this, it's still my time that I'm spending to do something. I have to charge for my time. It's the only thing I do is I work. So therefore I charge for my time." I never forgot that. And it applies to every professional in any industry, in my opinion, that charges for time. Know your value and what your time is worth and be okay with it. Again, there are certain geographical restrictions to what the economy will allow and what your area has as a standard, but, like, know what your time is worth and don't give it away unless there's a good reason to, or you have a good purpose to do for life. But I'm talking general purpose, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always run into people, especially people who've been doing this for a long time, that are like, I always try and help people out, you know, I don't charge for this, and yeah, go out of my way, call somebody back after the time I'm supposed to. And then, you know, you get crapped on after all that anyway, right? Like, it doesn't buy enough goodwill after all that it really helps you. And then I'm like, hey, listen, like, you need to take care of you, right? Like, if you're putting out your, you know, if you're working extra hours, you're working nights, weekends, you're working holidays, you're going out of your way to help people, you gotta cover your, yeah, like, that should bear a cost.
Every one of us has done favors for people at some time. There's a place for that. I'm good with that. Goodwill is a good thing. But for general work, somebody's going to hire you and then argue your value. That's not okay.
Yeah, 100%. And then there always gets into this argument, question, you know, discussion, concern about, like, how does an MSP handle the rotation of staff during off-peak hours, right? Like, are you really ever going to be like 9 to 5 bank hours, you know, in IT when, you know, you're supporting third-party businesses? I guess some people can get away with that. I know a lot of people don't, you know, like, you know, businesses run, right, outside of those hours. So, you know, like, and this is always the, well, you pay your people to be on call. Do you pay if an incident happens? You know, do you pass the cell phone around? Like, what happens if they don't get, you know, get the call, or they miss it, or the battery was dead, or it was on silent? Like, even in 2024, we still have this thing out there, right? And then, like, I feel like, I don't know if this is just a general thought or this is just what you see on the Reddits and the Discords and the Facebook groups, but it's like, these techs really don't want to be on call. They try and avoid it like the plague. And if anything, they're salty that they have to do it. And like, they feel like it's not even worth any extra compensation that they get to do it.
Well, I mean, shameless plug, that's kind of why we have a business here. But like the concept of after hours on call rotations, I mean, I've never liked it from an MSP perspective. You're burning out your staff. You're asking them to do something they don't want to do. They're frustrated anytime that phone rings, whether it's their week or whatever. This is not something that, even if they come to work for you and they know it's part of the deal and they sign up and you guys make your agreement, believe me, they're not happy about it. So, and there's a cost to them theoretically to do it. Otherwise, it's part of the deal, which sucks even more. So if it's included for them, then that's even worse. If it's not included for them, it's out of your pocket as the business owner to pay them when that happens. So you better be charging for your time back. And hey, if you're not doing any of that and you're not burning out your staff and you're keeping them happy and you're letting them go to home to their families at night and not have to worry about it, then guess what? You're using a service like Mission Control, which is what we're for, still has a cost to it, right? Yep. So you're still going to have to pass that cost on, hopefully with a margin, so you're making money. That's the whole idea, right? But now your staff are happier, they get to sleep, and you've got 20, instantly you're a 24/7 business.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you this. You'd be surprised. Like, everybody, like, I feel like somewhere between 2015 and 2020, everybody is like, oh, 24/7, it's all the rage, let's all do it. And then, like, everyone played the gamble where it's like, well, how many calls are we going to get before 8 p.m., 8 a.m. and after 6 p.m., right? And, like, second you offer it, people start to use it, right? Like, before you're like, hey, don't call me after these hours or I'm going to charge you extra. And they're like, oh, I don't want to pay extra, I'll just wait. Now it's, oh, well, if you're telling me it's available, I'm going to call. I'm going to expect service.
Yeah, I think it depends. I think certainly there was a lot of it being offered because, let's say, the owner or the C-levels of the client business needed that, and or they travel, so they would need that. So it's always those specific people that you had to make sure got covered. And yeah, if you didn't have a service like us, you're either having a tech, again, be that on call, which pisses them off, or you're being woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning to deal with it, which pisses you off. None of it makes for a wonderful morning the next day. But you're right. As soon as you turn that trigger to become a 24/7 shop using a service like us, now you've got, the client realizes they can do it. They'll take more advantage of it. Sometimes they actually really like it because they were saving things for the next day that now they don't have to.
Right.
But they will use it if it's there.
Well, I'll say this. There's something to be said for, again, like, if you don't offer it, do they go somewhere else because it's not available on your side?
No, I don't believe that. I mean, as much as I want to plug Mission Control and make us look awesome, the truth is, I don't think the core need changes. I think the original need is to cover those few people, those C-levels, the execs, the VIPs, the ones who travel, because those people might need help regardless, and that never changed. The difference would be your general office people that, you know, at 5 o'clock you close, but at 5:30 they're still working because they have to get stuff done and they need somebody to call. Okay, but it's not 9 p.m. usually. They would say that for the next day, they'd still be okay to do that.
Okay, that's fair. Are you seeing any trends with, because, you know, like, there's still a lot of hybrid working, right? It may not be totally work from home like it used to be, right? Because, like, you know, a lot of people had to go back to the office, whatever, but there's still some sort of version of sometime you're at home, sometime you're at work. I feel like the office environment was way more controlled than everybody working from everywhere else. Did that, you know, when, you know, did that calm down, or do you still see a fair bit of uptick with the remote part of it generating activity?
I could do this for like hours if you let me. This one is a loaded question. So as you know, we went entirely remote, and I still am. I prefer the office. I like seeing people. I like talking to people. The arguments of which is more productive overall, I think, you know, they'll continue to go on in studies for a long time.
Sure.
We built into our platform, which has a backend that our team internally uses, trackable things. So for example, like the gap report's the most effective thing we have. It, for the technical team, it looks at the gap between everything they do. So a gap between the sign-in and the time that they ask for their first ticket. The time when they ask for the ticket and the time they accept it. Time they accept it to the time that they make a time entry, and does that time entry match or close enough? And the time from when they submit their next time entry to the time that they ask for their next ticket. So I see all the gaps in their entire day. So it allows me to see their value. I don't have that same relationship with them from a owner to employee, right? So that's different. But if we're talking productivity, I think there are tools out there. We built one that can do stuff like that. But it doesn't change the fact that most of my conversations are now like this, where it's in a box.
Fair.
Right. And I'm not a fan of it, but in Toronto, I can tell you that many, many, many companies will never go back to in office because people moved. They moved further away from the office. And they've also got a very different mentality now that they don't have to. And if you make me, I'll go work somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
From a technology standpoint, though, troubleshooting the local home network, wireless router, cable modem, like just all of the stuff that comes with being outside of a corporate location, I feel like it just creates the room for more service requests, right? Like when you're in the corporate location, it's pretty, you know, like uniform, right? Like you can control that. When you're everywhere else, you never know, right? Like you're just dealing with everybody's at home everything or on the road everything. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people got a good handle for it, but I feel like there's always the exception where it's like, all right, well, you know, I think you're having an internet issue. Now we need to call your internet provider and have them double check, you know, their equipment and make sure that this is not, you know, a problem on their side. And like all of a sudden it just creates more stuff to do.
Sure. I would bet you that every single MSP, if they were in business a couple of years ago, like me, will never, ever, ever forget the 2 weeks or so that it took them to get everyone to work from home.
Yeah.
It's still scars on our bodies and in our minds that we have from those couple of weeks. And it changed everything to a point where now you just have way more points of failure that you have to deal with for helping your user. Again, that to the point I started with of the MSP has more and more and more and more to deal with. So if we're talking about rates and standards and such, why shouldn't that be higher? Because the end client doesn't want to pay more? I get it, but guess what? Your end client has more BS. If you undercut yourself, again, I just think that you're lowering your value, and that's not right.
100% agree. 100% agree. I would hope that everyone has at least gone back to the practice of creating some sort of, even if it's small, right? Like rate increase over a set period of time, you know, to deal with, you know, the unexpected stuff, right? I don't know if it's 3%, 4%, 5%, but like if you wait too long to raise your rates, now all of a sudden when you're going into a big jump, that's when people, I think, get salty.
Sure. I agree.
Yeah, for sure. In your business, do you set rates differently based on like some sort of term, a commitment, or do you not even offer that?
Well, generally speaking, our business is month to month. And we do that, I think, for everyone's benefit, mostly on the flexibility side. But our business tends to be used in a variety of different ways. If an MSP, for example, is in between hires, but they intend to hire and they do want to hire, but they're having a lot of trouble hiring and they've got a period of time where they just can't fill that employee and they need staffing, they can use temporarily and scale that down. That's really where the month-to-month piece came in. ultimately, we obviously would prefer to be involved in an MSP's growth, which is what we're for. Like, use us to help grow your business so you're not focusing on all that support and inbound call answering and all that stuff. We can do that. And a lot of our partners have been with us for many, many years and hopefully stay with us for forever. And we continue to help them grow by using us. But changing of rates and such, like if we're talking about it for the rate purposes, because we offer the buy device model and the buy time model, and MSPs flip back and forth depending on what client they're dealing with or whatever, it becomes very easy. They can change things quickly. If we have a price increase, which we haven't had one in a long time, but if, and I'm not saying they will be, don't get out free tip. But if we had a price increase, it would just be part of that change, or it would be part of, let's say, a new term or whatever. But we're not, you know, we're not in a position where everything is capped. We don't do the 3-year contract thing. This is not who we are. So,
no, I'm asking for the masses, right? So, like, everybody, you know, like, I know a lot of people are like being conditioned to do that, but that every MSP had their wish, I would think all of their vendors would be just a pay-as-you-go model where they didn't have to handcuff, right? And unfortunately, that's not always the case.
I don't know. I see value on the MSP side too, on locking some things in from a price lock perspective or certain advantages that they might get. But I'm speaking bluntly, I don't believe in the 3-year thing. Like I do car leases for 2 years. I don't even do 3 or 4. So that's a car. That's just me. Everyone's got their preference, but there are benefits to doing short-term things. And also flexibility. Like if you offer, like we have a couple different offerings, right? We have an offering that's month to month, and we do have a 12-month if they want a lower commitment, but like per month, but they want to commit for a longer period of time. So you get a trade-off for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as long as there's a reason to do it, as opposed to forcing you to say a 3-year term.
That's fair. What kind of car are you driving?
I was driving Cadillacs.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was looking at the Lyriq, the electric one.
Okay.
So I just finished one lease and I was looking into the Lyriq. That's why that came up.
Got it.
But I did 3 or 4 Cadillac 2-year leases back to back to back because it was so easy. You just get a new car every 2 years. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know how things are going in Canada, but in the US, this electric car thing might be hitting a wall. And I you know, Hertz, right? Which pretty wide, you know, well known car rental company here, on at least on the US side. They're like, nope, got 300,000 cars for sale, all electric. Buy whatever you want because we're getting out of the electric car business. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of electric cars they're selling.
Yeah, I was just talking to my cousin is in finance, and we were just talking about this literally yesterday at the gym. And he was talking about a call that he was listening to and how I think somebody was saying how the quantity of electric car vehicles sales has gone up.
Mm-hmm.
Percentage-wise, if you start at zero, okay, well, that makes sense. Every year you're selling more, but you don't have an infrastructure yet to support the mass volume of cars you're trying to sell, and it's going to be years before you do. So anything that you're doing now is geographically focused on where can I charge my car? Well, that's going to take some time. I do think it'll get there. I just think it's, you know, you're not talking the next 5 years like they originally thought. In 10 years, gas cars will be gone. I think it's more like 20, 30 years. Gas cars will be lower quantities than they are now.
A couple of things, especially, you know, because you're up north of where I'm at. Batteries don't tend to do well in a very, very cold temperature. So that's number one. And number two, like when big car manufacturers like Mercedes-Benz, I think last week came out and said, we're flipping back to combustion engine manufacturing. And we're like, okay. You know, like that's fine. And for you car guys out there and girls, Toyota, which I believe still to this point is the largest worldwide car manufacturer out there, only are producing hybrids. I think they only have one electric car that they put out there. Yeah, Sandy's like, hydrogen cars. I would love to see it. I'm sure it's coming, but isn't that interesting? The largest car manufacturer in the world is like, we're good. We'll just keep doing hybrids until we come to the next thing. And it's like, you just completely skipped electric. That's an eyebrow raise.
It's just the infrastructure is just, to your point, I guess there's certain, I didn't even think about that, but there's certain, I guess, weather conditions that do limit this, but you don't have the infrastructure. So for the car manufacturers to invest the way they've got to invest to be able to build these cars, that an infrastructure doesn't exist to support it. I get it.
Yeah, crazy. Well, good luck with those Cadillacs. I hope you might want to not.
I didn't buy it. I just, I'm looking for the next one. It's going to be gas.
2 years, right? So, like, if you don't like it, yeah, you just move on to the next one, right?
Actually, Cadillac was one where they gave you a, I'm trying to think if it was a 6 or 12 month. No, it was an 18 month. They gave any lease period of time on an electric vehicle, they gave you an 18 month out. If you didn't like it after 18 months, you could return it, get out of the lease, and get into something new. That was on electric vehicles only. I think I heard that.
Wow. That's not a lot of time.
A year and a half?
Yeah.
To decide, to say, you know what? I've driven this enough. I know electric isn't for me right now, or it is and I'm good.
I like that. That was smart. I think they did a good thing there.
I think they're going to get beat up for it. Like, I think a lot of people are going to take advantage of it, and they're going to get stuck with a lot of cars. That's what I think.
Well, you know, that's just how it goes. But hey, I like the idea of it. And they also, I think a lot of the car manufacturers, I think Volvo is one of the first ones where they're like, you know, like effectively they're like car subscription as a service.
Oh, really?
Like you would roll your car every 2 years, right? Like, or a year and a half. And like, you wouldn't even go into a traditional lease. Like they would just, like the insurance was included, like the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
Move you to the next car after the next period.
I like that. That's smart.
I mean, at some point, I think that's, you know, if it follows what software does and everything else and what we do, I think it'll get there. Jason, where do people find out more about Mission Control, the MSP program? Like, how do they engage?
Okay. Quick brief about us. Our job is to be a technical extension. It's a white label technical extension of an MSP and servicing their clients. They would use us because they're having trouble hiring, can't find enough technical staff. Maybe they lost somebody, now they're short and supporting the client though they have. They need it 24/7 and they don't have that in-house. All of it is technical resources to use. We're integrated with the MSP stack, so they don't need extra agents or tools or services. We use what they already have. And everything we do, as I said, is a white label and 24/7 service. You can talk directly to me. You can talk to any of my team. The information on the website is www.missioncontrolknock, that's N-O-C, knock.com. You can email launch or info, let's say launch at missioncontrolknock.com. And the idea of it is we've got help desk services to help end users. We can just take the calls and make the tickets for you if you prefer that, or we can take the calls and make the tickets for us. You can decide how that goes. We can do the NOC support, which is the back of the house server and network support, cloud services, those kinds of things. We can do project work, so like rollouts, large migrations, things like that. And we can even do cybersecurity SOC remediation from SOC events. All of those are white label technical support services. I would be glad to have conversations with anybody who even just wants to talk about it, because as we learned earlier on the call, we've got both a device-based model, but we've also got a time-based model. And the time-based model works really well for generalized overflow after hours, evenings, weekends, holidays, instantly makes you an MSP that's 24/7 capable. On the by device side, maybe you just have a client or set of clients that just needs our help all the time. So you get to really decide. Everything is pick and choose, mix and match, with no commitment to annual contracts. And we have no client minimum, and we have no onboarding fee. So try and make it easy for you. That's my plug.
Love it. And if for people who are listening to the audio portion of this, Jason, if you search for him online, so it's Jason, J-S-O-N, like you would expect. Last name Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, and then Mission Control Knock. So if you look him up online, LinkedIn, all that good stuff, I'm sure that's how you get him.
And I will be at that Enable Empower event for sure.
I think that's going to be a really good event.
Oh, I'm excited. I have not done the Enable event before, so I am super stoked about that. Plus, I hear MSP Initiative is going to make it a really good party. So
we absolutely are. So like, they were alternating years for everybody that doesn't know. And obviously Enable's a big name out there, but they were, their last US based event was in Vegas or coming out of the pandemic, and then they flipped last year. They went to Prague, which, by the way, awesome. Never been to Prague until that event, and that was totally. I wish I spent more time there. And then this year, coming back and into the States, doing Dallas. And then I hear they're going to go back next year to maybe like Amsterdam or something, or I don't know if it's set, but that's what I'm hearing. So love that. Great folks over there, by the way. So David Weeks and his team over there. So love those guys. And yeah, I mean, Dallas, everything's bigger in Texas. It's not a tagline. It's for real. And we're excited. I think it's going to be a good time.
I always look forward to the barbecue. It's just something that I just can't find here in Toronto. So call it a guilty pleasure. I get good weather and good barbecue while I'm once. And you guys always put on a great event. So thank you for allowing me to participate. And thanks for today. Always love the chat, George. Look forward to the next one.
Absolutely. Guys, this session was recorded. You can find it at msbinitiative.com under session shortly. It'll also be in your podcatchers if you're following MSB Initiative, and it'll be on YouTube. So go ahead, rewind, send Jason a message, be like, wait a minute, you said this. Ask him about this user verification thing. And if you're not doing it on your own in your own MSB, guys, I'm not even plugging anybody here. Just adopt something, please. It's like low hanging fruit, and like you just don't want to get caught with your pants down. So definitely do something there. We do these a couple times a week, but definitely keep checking back in Tuesdays, Thursdays. We record these live or online 24/7. And if we don't see you out on the road, keep on checking back with us virtually. Jason, see you in a month.
Awesome.
You got
Thanks.
It.
All the best, man. See ya.